Well, this has been a good evening. One thing I enjoy about children's class is usually we can all understand it. And interesting story there, Sam. I guess you get into quite some experiences driving Amish there. So thanks for letting us in on that. As Merv mentioned, he had asked me if I would talk about, I think, some current events, I think is how he put it. And, as I reflected on that, it would seem like there's a lot of different ways that we could approach that. It seems like there's a lot of things happening in the world. And as I thought about it, I looked at a few headlines yesterday, and thought maybe I'd just read some of the headlines that give us an idea what's going on in the world here. So one of the headlines was stock markets tumbled again on Friday as fears of a banking crisis resurfaced. Recently, one of the our representatives in Washington warned that the world is going to end in 10 years if we don't address climate change. And another, the leading women, said that, women are going to bear the brunt of this. They're going to be the ones looking for food, for firewood, and for places to go to when the grass is all gone. Global warming is just going to, things are going to be terrible. A New York man who supports ISIS was arrested for plotting to carry out violent attacks at an upcoming parade. And not long ago, a man pulled out a gun in a crowded shopping mall, and he mowed down a number of shoppers before he was stopped. Well, suppose that would happen to a grocery store when one of us was in there. North Korea launches another missile. And over in the Ukraine, war has not gone real well for Russia, and so Putin's not happy, and he threatens to use nuclear weapons. Is World War III going to break out? And these are things that we can look at and be like, wow. What's happening? I mean, this is some real stuff. What are we going to do if some of these things come to pass? I'd like to go to 2 Kings chapter 6. 2 Kings chapter 6, starting at verse 8. And I'm not going to give a lot of background here other than to say that this wasn't really the best of times in Israel and Judah, or the best and the brightest of times. And so here it says in 2 Kings chapter 6, verse 8, it says, "Then the king of Syria warred against Israel and took counsel with his servants, saying, 'In such and such a place shall be my camp.' And the man of God send unto the king of Israel, saying, 'Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are coming down.' And the king of Israel sent to the place which the man of God told him and warned him of, and saved himself there not once or twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing. And he called his servants and said to them, 'Will you not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?' And one of his servants said, 'None, my lord, O king. But Elisha, the prophet that is in Israel, telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber.' And he said, 'Go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him.' And it was told him, saying, 'Behold, he is in Dothan.' Therefore he sent thither horses and chariots and a great host. And they came by night and compassed the city about. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, a host compassed the city, both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, 'Alas, my master, how shall we do?' So suppose you got up one morning and walked out the door, and you'd open the door, and here's a big armed mob just waiting to grab you. So how? What are you going to do? Well, I picture that's maybe kind of how it was when the servant got up. He got up and he walks out and he's like, "Whoa, Elijah, look, what are we going to do?" And Elijah's like, "Don't be afraid." What? Now, really? I mean, what? It's just like Elijah's like, "Big deal." Elisha answered, "Fear not. For they that be with us are more than they that be with them." And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire around about Elisha. It's no wonder Elisha wasn't afraid. He saw something that the young man didn't see. Elisha looked out, and sure, he saw the armed mob. He saw the people with evil intentions. But he saw through a different lens than what the young man was looking. And he saw something the young man didn't see. Arlen mentioned something about our actions hinging on our beliefs. And I think that's very well put. Because when Elisha saw the armed mob, it says that when the young man asked him what they should do, it says Elisha prayed, and he said, "Lord, open his eyes." So Elisha had something that gave him a completely different perspective than what the young man had, and. I think it was simply what he believed, what he knew to be truth and to be reality. And so he prayed, and the Lord opened the young man's eyes, and God delivered them and gave them a great deliverance. He smote the enemies with blindness, and the story goes on. But that's where I'd like to leave it. And so God worked a miraculous thing there. The hosts of heaven were surrounding them, and God came down and miraculously delivered the two men who trusted in him. So that was, we look at that, and that was really amazing. I mean, that was astonishing. But there's something else happened at the same place. And a number of years before that, another situation happened there, and I'd like to talk about that just a little bit. If we would go back to Genesis chapter 37, a young man went looking for his brothers, and his dad said, go see where your brothers are and how they're doing. And it says they were keeping, I think it says they were keeping their cattle. And so dad wanted to know how they were doing, how things are going for him. And so the young man took off, and he couldn't find him right away. And it says he wandered around over there, and finally he ran into somebody that said, "What are you looking for?" And he said, "Well, I'm looking for my brothers." "Oh," he said. Let's go to Genesis 37, verse 17. It says, "The man said, 'They're departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan.' And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near to them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said to each other, 'Behold, this dreamer comes. Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast has devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams.' And Reuben heard it and delivered him out of their hands and said, 'Let us not kill him.' And Reuben said unto them, 'Shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that's in this wilderness, and lay no hand on him that that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again.' And it came to pass when Joseph was come to his brothers that they stripped Joseph out of his coat, his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. And Judah said to his brethren, "What profit is it if we slay our brothers and conceal his blood? Come, and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he's our brother in our flesh." And his brothers were content. Then there passed by Midianites merchantmen, and they drew and lifted Joseph out of the pit, and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. So Joseph goes to carry out the errand that his dad had sent him on. And, he came and looking and finally found him in Dothan. And his brothers hated him because they felt like he had bragged, they felt like, and he had made himself to be something that they couldn't see was ever going to happen. And so they really despised him. And they saw him coming, and they said, "All right, here's our chance. Let's just get rid of him." And so they throw him into a pit. And a group of merchants came by as they were eating, and one of the boys said, "So let's sell him to them instead of killing him." Now, they probably didn't expect him to survive very long when they did that. But, very likely they felt like, okay, that would get him off their hands and it would get him out of the way. He'd probably, those guys can kill him or take care of him. So it was approximately a 30-day trip through the desert to go to Egypt from where they were here. And very likely Joseph was chained, and very likely they made him walk a lot of the way and probably treated him like dirt. So where was God when all this was happening? I mean, this is the same place where the flaming chariots and all that was around everybody and was around Elijah and his servant. Well, where was God when this was happening? Where was the heavenly host? Joseph wasn't a superhuman man. Joseph was a young man that felt things just like we do. And I'm sure that when he was in that pit and he realized how much his brothers hated him, and he heard him talk about killing him, I'm sure Joseph was scared. And he probably cried and prayed to God for deliverance. So where was God when all this was happening? Well, it says they came to Egypt. And it says, and the Lord was with Joseph. Even as these terrible things were happening to him, God was with Joseph. And Joseph's faith was obviously a strong faith. Obviously, he trusted God. Even though I can't imagine of something that would be, or I can't imagine what would be a whole lot more scary for a young man than to be treated like that by his family and end up with a bunch of strangers that are, mean to you, and that are just treating you like another piece of merchandise that they can make some money on. And so you get hauled off far, far away to a strange place, and you get sold to somebody else. It would seem like that would be about as tough as life could get. But somehow Joseph trusted God through that process, even though I'm sure he didn't understand what was happening. But he understood that God was greater than what was happening to him. And he knew that he could trust God, and that was a rock and an anchor for him. Now, when we think about the things that are happening in our world, current events, if you will, is World War III going to break out? Is the earth going to suddenly get hotter and hotter and burn up? I think we have some verses that we can hang on for that. You know, we know there's always going to be seasons. Now, we also know that someday there'll be a new heaven and a new earth. So, yes, the earth as we know it will pass away sometime. But, you know, that doesn't need to scare us. But what I'd like us to understand is, so, we can look at headlines and we can look at that and be like, wow, you know, things are really getting bad. Are the banks in trouble? You know, is our money safe? Things aren't very good. But we can also, there's also some other things that are just as much a reality as those things are, that are just as real as that. And I'd like to just remind us of a few of those things. In Jeremiah 23, God says, "Am I a God at hand, says the Lord?" And this is God talking about himself. He says, "Am I a God at hand and not a God afar off? Can any hide himself that I shall not see him, says the Lord? Do not I fill heaven and earth, says the Lord?" So that's just as real as anything else. And that's something we can stand on and we can know. In Matthew 26, as an armed mob approached Jesus, one of his close friends took drastic action and he drew first blood. I think he was ready to just give himself for Jesus. He was ready to die for Jesus. But Jesus stopped him and said, he asked him, "Don't you know that I can appeal to my Father and he'd release thousands of angels, he'd release the heavenly host to wipe out these people?" But he said, "If we did that, then how would the scriptures be fulfilled that this is what needs to happen?" Jesus knew why he was here. And he was looking through a different lens than what Peter was looking through. So we can look at current events as far as through the lens of the newspapers, the headlines, and they can be pretty frightening. But you know, we can also look, we also experience what's happening in the world through things that happen to us personally. And so sometimes, we find ourselves suddenly in a personal crisis. Maybe we find ourselves in a strained relationship, or suddenly our health is shattered. Or we can be hurt deeply by an unfair accusation. What about if we'd open our door one morning and right there's a mob just waiting to grab us? We might die right there. Let me just leave some encouraging realities with us that we can stand on, that are just as much a reality as some of these other things that can feel so unsettling and so frightening. In Hebrews, the Bible tells us, it says, "Let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For he, our God, the good shepherd, the one who cares for us, has said, I will never leave you. I will never leave you." That's something we can get a hold of with both hands and hang on to. It really doesn't matter what happens. We can hang on to that. "I will never leave you nor forsake you, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do to me." Now that's something we can get a hold of with both hands and we can stand on. You know, what we believe produces actions. We can stand on that. If we're looking at current events through the lens that we should be, we know that sometime this old world is coming to an end. And, you know, the Bible tells us that events leading up to the end are going to be earth-shaking sometimes. Sometimes in more ways than one. And many people are going to be terrified. But Jesus said, Lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Isaiah 41, we have a few verses that I'd like to just read as another anchor we can stand on. In Isaiah 41, verses 10 to 13, Fear thou not. Now, isn't that a comforting word from the one who has everything in his hands and whose children we are? He says, Do not be afraid. Fear not, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen you. Yea, I will help you. Yea, I will uphold you with the right hand of my righteousness. Behold, all that were incensed against thee shall be ashamed and confounded. They shall be as nothing, and they that strive with thee shall perish. Thou shalt seek them and shalt not find them, even them that contended with thee. They that war against thee shall be as nothing, and as a thing of naught. You know, when God sets out to defend us, he does it thoroughly and completely. When he puts a stop to something, there's no stopping God. God does it completely. For I, the Lord, thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, Fear not, I will help thee. In Psalm 46, it says, God is our refuge, our place of safety, and he's our strength. He's a very present help in trouble. And I think that means that God is right beside us. He's not far away when things are scary and unsettling and, you know, we don't know what's going to happen next. God's right here with us. That's where we can find a safe place and an anchor. Therefore, because we know and understand and believe that, therefore will not we fear, even though the earth be removed and the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Selah. So, you know, as we think about some of those frightening headlines, as we think about some of the possibilities that could happen in the world and in society, or as we think about the personal crises that are frightening and that are unsettling and that, you know, we're not sure how we're going to face. Let's remember that we have a God that is beside us, that is with us, and that will never forsake us. And we can run to him. He's our refuge. He's our safety. And he's our anchor. And we can trust him. So let's trust our lives to him. And know that when this old world ends, we have a new heaven and a new earth to look forward to. God bless you.